case this morning is in the matter of Haymart, the appeal of Simmons. Ms. Cranbiel.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Karen Cranbiel, and I'm here this morning representing appellant Wilhelmina Simmons. Ms. Simmons is a personal injury claimant in the Kmart bankruptcy case. Her claim was filed one day after the bar date due to a mailing error. She filed a motion to have her claim deemed timely filed, and that was denied. Her motion was governed by Federal Rule of Bankruptcy Procedure 9006 and the Pioneer case by the Supreme Court. Those authorities allow the bankruptcy court to permit the late filing of a claim in a case of excusable neglect. And stepping back to look at the big picture.
Of course, your problem is that I think you've correctly stated it. The rule permits a bankruptcy court to allow it. But the argument you're now making is that the rule compels the bankruptcy court to allow it, because here the bankruptcy judge exercised discretion against allowing it. In what sense does this rule compel the trial judge to allow this?
It does not compel the bankruptcy court to allow it. However,
if it doesn't compel a bankruptcy judge to allow it, don't you lose?
No, Your Honor.
Because the bankruptcy judge exercised discretion against your client.
But the discretion is subject to review. And, Your Honor, the court's analysis was under Pioneer, there's a balancing test between the interest of finality and the interest of justice. And that's done through a four-factor analysis. And in the Pioneer case, the Supreme Court explained that analysis should be done with keeping in mind the particular chapter of the bankruptcy code that the debtor's case is proceeding under. In Kmart, they're in Chapter 11, and as the Supreme Court pointed out, the purpose of a Chapter 11 is, one, rehabilitation of the debtor, but also, two, avoiding the forfeitures of creditors' claims. And I would argue, Your Honor, that the bankruptcy court and the district court treated this case as a case under Chapter 7, where, as the Supreme Court explained, the goal is the prompt closure of the case and a prompt distribution of creditors. Those were not the overarching considerations in this case. However, that's the mindset in which the motions were denied. The Pioneer factors are, is there prejudice to the debtor? What was the reason for the delay, the length of delay, and good faith? The bankruptcy court and the district court, starting with prejudice, really focused on, first of all,
I don't think one has to go through these as if this were a statute. Okay. And what the Supreme Court said was important in Pioneer was that the neglect be excusable. If I understand the bankruptcy judge's view here, the neglect wasn't excusable. Counsel had no reason whatsoever for waiting until the very last instant to start the process of getting a claim from the Virgin Islands to Massachusetts or wherever it was.
That's an interesting...
Has counsel ever explained why waited until the very last instant, very last possible instant?
That explanation is not in the record, Your Honor.
But unless there's a good reason for doing that, one of the consequences of being in the Virgin Islands or someplace where you can't just walk to the courthouse to file is you have to take precautions to move things a little earlier.
Well, Your Honor, I would...
And if there's no explanation in the record about the delay, it's awfully hard to say as a matter of law that it must be excusable. Right. Given the bankruptcy court said it's not excusable, and the district court said not excusable, given no explanation, how do we find it to be compelled that they had to find it was excusable?
Because this claim was filed one day late due to a mailing error, and looking at the issue of why the claim wasn't filed earlier, it is imposing a higher standard on the claimant than excusable neglect. That is imposing a standard that's more akin to prudence or, I don't want to say perfection, but, you know, I would wager to say that there were many claimants who did send their claims the day before whose claims were timely filed. And those claimants are not here today. We're here today because of the mailing error. And but for the mailing error, that's what separates us from the timely filed claimants. And that's what we should look at for excusable neglect.
Look, everybody knows that errors occur. Seems to me the biggest error in this case was tendering the document to the Postal Service. When I started reading these papers, I wondered why FedEx didn't get the document delivered on time. It was only later I discovered it was tendered to the Postal Service. Anybody who tendered the document to the Postal Service has consented to delay. Seems to me that if you're going to do something like that, a sensible lawyer takes the precaution of acting a day or two early. As I say, if there's no explanation at all for why the lawyer decided to wait till the very last hour, it becomes hard, especially if you give it to the Postal Service.
Well, Your Honor, I would say that I can point to an example of another case where there was no reason in the record. Unfortunately, it's an unpublished decision, but it is cited in our brief. It's the Spring Ford case from the Eastern District of Pennsylvania in 2003, and there was no reason cited in the record. And the court did point out that there was no reason cited in the record, but it didn't prevent them from granting the motion. What the bankruptcy court really focused on was, one, the size of the claim, saying that the claim was no small amount, and that it was unfair to other creditors to allow that claim to be filed, even if it was, you know, one day late. That analysis was flawed because the prejudice analysis in Pioneer is prejudice to the debtor, not prejudice to other creditors. And the
I don't understand. What's the difference between prejudice to the debtor and prejudice to other creditors, given that the debtor is just a stand-in for the other creditors?
Well, Your Honor, in that case, I would argue that the Pioneer factor would say prejudice to the debtor or creditors, or prejudice to creditors, or prejudice to the estate. But it says prejudice to debt to the debtor. And in the O'Brien case, the Third Circuit explained...
I just wonder what's the difference. You know what happened to Kmart. Their stockholders were wiped out. Their old creditors became their new stockholders. And the unsecured creditors didn't get all of their unsecured debt paid. They were given stock. So Kmart is its former creditors. It's just the same thing.
Well, Your Honor, the difference is becomes clear when you look at what prejudice is really about, according to the O'Brien case. And what the O'Brien case in the Third Circuit says is that prejudice goes to the merits of the case, the merits in this case of the litigation. How is Kmart prejudiced in terms of dealing with the litigation? And it's not prejudiced in this case at all. The claim was one day late only. Some information had been exchanged between the parties. Kmart had a system in effect in the bankruptcy case to deal with personal injury claims, and so there was no prejudice to the debtor. And I see I'm into my rebuttal time. Stop and save it. Thank you.
Certainly, counsel. Mr. Shapiro.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I am Robert E. Shapiro. I represent the Appellee Kmart Corporation appeal. Your Honors, there are three principles I think should guide your consideration of this matter and lead you to affirm the decision of Judge Sonderby in the Bankruptcy Court as it was affirmed by Judge St. Eve in the District Court below. They're number one, there's no question that the bar date was missed. Under those circumstances, this claim cannot proceed absent a showing of excusable neglect. Which takes the analysis way beyond just whether it was filed a day late. Number two, once there was a requirement of...
Wait, way beyond whether it was...
Well, as the Supreme Court says, you have to consider all the facts and circumstances, including those that Your Honor pointed out, with respect to why it was that the claimant here and her lawyer waited until the day before from the Virgin Islands.
Do you have any doubt that if the bankruptcy judge had decided to accept this claim, that would have been within her discretion?
I believe that it would have been within her discretion under certain circumstances, but not with some of the findings that she made, which were upon the motion that was brought by the claimant in this particular case. What the claimant was then obligated to do was come in and meet her burden of showing excusable neglect. And the bankruptcy court found that there had not been such a showing. In fact, there was a very spare pleading filed as to why excusable neglect should be found here, which basically blamed it all on the mail clerk. There was never an explanation in that filing of the matter that you raised, which is why it is that this particular claimant and this lawyer, who, by the way, has been active in this bankruptcy court and in this bankruptcy matter, as
not
a judge,
active enough.
Well, not with respect to this claim, but with respect to other claims, was very active and had filed numerous claims previously and knew full well when the bar date was and the need to get the claimant on time. And under those circumstances, it was, as I said, the appellant's obligation to come in and make a full showing with respect to all the facts and circumstances, why this claim was not sent in until the day before, why, for example, there was no effort given the circumstances, the last-minute filing, the difficulties that might exist in sending things by postal service from the Virgin Islands. No follow-up.
Did the Northern District of Illinois accept electronic filings? Does it not?
I think it does now, Your Honor. I'm not quite certain of that, but
Likely the lawyer could have hit a button and transmitted electronically.
There are all kinds of things this lawyer could have done, including, if necessary, getting on an airplane and making certain that it was hand delivered, or putting somebody else on an airplane. All lawyers know that sometimes will last.
Sometimes happens.
It sometimes happens, and this lawyer didn't do that. Not only that, this lawyer did nothing subsequently to make certain that the claim had gotten there, notwithstanding the last minute sending of it, and merely did not even include the self-addressed stamp envelope that was recommended, did not even once finding out that the claim was filed late, did not act very promptly, saying only that that she needed to assemble all the materials. Yet, as your honors will see in the record, what was ultimately filed did not ordinarily take a month to put together. Now, under all those circumstances, I think right there you can see that there wasn't a sufficient showing, as was the obligation of the appellant here, that that there was excusable neglect. And under those circumstances, the bankruptcy court was within her discretion to make a determination that there was not excusable neglect. She actually even went a little bit further. Well, one of the things that she did was look at the issue of prejudice, and she made an explicit finding that there was prejudice in this case. Now, I need to take issue with my my colleague here about the nature of the prejudice. Justice White, in the Pioneer case, makes an explicit statement that prejudice can be to the administration of the estate. As your honors know, this is a huge bankruptcy, possibly the largest retail bankruptcy ever filed in the history of the United States bankruptcy courts. There are tens of thousands of claims that need to be processed in this case, including large numbers of late filed claims where people are coming in all the time and saying it's excusable neglect. The bankruptcy judge was in a very, very good position to be able to evaluate what kind of an impact this claim would have. I might note that it's clear in the record that this was the fourth group of omnibus objections that was taken up. While this lawyer was sleeping on the rights of the claimant, the court had processed through three other sets of supposedly late filed claims that are justified by excusable neglect. And the court well knew the need for finality and to keep the regularity of the proceedings going. Under those circumstances, it fell to the claimant to come in and make a showing to this court that that there would not be further prejudice to the estate, and that she also met the other requirements that are set out in Pioneer. And I submit that she didn't do that. I'd like to just say a couple of words about the fact that the judge did exercise her discretion. I believe that Pioneer itself talks about how that exercise of discretion is subject only to an abuse of discretion standard upon appeal. This court has confirmed that in a number of decisions. The Singson case, I believe, the Webb case, the Robb case, has always said it's abuse of discretion. And what is an abuse of discretion? It means no reasonable person could have come out the way the bankruptcy judge did. Now, clearly a reasonable person could come out the way the bankruptcy court did. In fact, we already know one reasonable person that did, which is to say Judge St. Eve, who, looking at the same facts, reached the same conclusion. But I don't want to just take that very practical thing. I think it's very clear that when you look at all of the various factors here, that it was within the discretion of the bankruptcy judge to say that this particular claimant had not met the burden that she was obligated to make, to undertake. So under those circumstances, I think that it's appropriate for this court to affirm the decision of Judge Sonderby as it was affirmed by Judge St. Eve. I can address the supplemental bar date issue if Your Honors are would like to hear about that. The one thing I might point out, just so that it's clear on the record, is that the issue whether this claimant had received notice was never raised on the first go-round. She did not in her papers say, I did not get sufficient notice, I did not get actual notice, I wasn't unaware of it. The reason is very obvious why, which is to say, there was an attempt to file such a claim by the specific bar date. And that doesn't get her off the hook to say, well, my lawyer was doing that, because the lawyer could have only done it with authorization from the claimant itself or herself. And under those circumstances, to the extent that we already know that this lawyer was authorized by this claimant to go ahead and try to file a proof of claim by that bar date, I think you can conclude easily from that that she had actual notice of the bankruptcy and the need to file her claim. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much, Counsel. Anything further, Ms. Greenfield?
One point of clarification, the Bankruptcy Court is not yet using the active electronic filing system for filing. Going back to a point that he addressed, he addressed is that in subsequent, the time of the bar date to the filing of the motion was 11 weeks in this case. Part of the delay was caused by the fact that the attorney wasn't yet aware that the claim had been filed late. In subsequent bankruptcy court decisions by this very same court, which are attached to my brief, the court looked at the same time frames as this claimant's time frame and found that they were minimal and non-prejudicial. And there are no facts which established in the transcript of her ruling, of the court's rulings, of why they would be prejudicial in one instance and not in the other. The prejudice under the Pettibone case has to be specific, not vague or speculative. And the bankruptcy court didn't make specific findings of why there was prejudice in this case. Although the court did mention that there would be prejudice to other creditors, it was merely the loss of a windfall, and it did not affect the debtor's ability to reorganize. There was not even a plan on file at the time of the claim being filed or the motion being brought. Finally, Your Honor,
the case is taken under advisement.